Technologic. Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, melt, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it.
We've gone all technological this week. Germany's been hit by its biggest data breach ever, as the private messages and personal details of hundreds of politicians were splashed all over the internet. No scandals, though. German politicians must be particularly clean living, I reckon. But it is a big story. So, on this week's Stammtisch, we're asking, what impact is technology having on the political debate? And because I am completely analogue, I have some hotshot whiz kids here who are much savvier with their tech than me. Fabian von der Mark is political correspondent for DW. Jill Petzinger is a reporter for Yahoo Finance, who writes about German business and politics. And Andrea Shalal is senior correspondent for Reuters here in Berlin. Now, seeing as we're all about the tech today, before we start, I want you all to tell me how technologically savvy you are. I want you to give me a score out of 10 for your technology prowess. And no false modesty, please. Andrea, how do you score yourself?
Well, I would rate myself an 8, but my children would say, your mom, you're way below the 4s.
Right. Why do you merit an 8? And why would your children say you're a 4?
Well, I think I'm a pretty early adopter. I love tech. You know, I'm sort of, you know, early email user in the dark ages.
But your kids are way ahead of you.
My kids are way ahead of me. Yeah, it's the way of all things. Okay, I can program a TV remote, however.
Oh, well, that's for me a 9, but I would say.
And I just recently repaired my dishwasher.
Your score is creeping up as we speak. I'll give you an 8 then. Good. Okay, I like it. Fabian, your score.
If this counts, I've repaired my dishwasher as well with a YouTube tutorial. So
I think we're slipping into German engineering here rather than technology.
I think I would give myself a 7.
Okay.
Since I know that there are really geeks and nerds around that know a lot, much more than I know about technology. But I do like the technological world. And
so
I think
you're above average?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. And why would you say you're above average? You're more than a 5?
As Andrea, I early adopted as well. I think I wrote a thesis, my diploma thesis on virtual reality 25 years ago. So,
Wow. What's the virtual reality? Jill, what's your score?
Oh, I'm going to give myself a very hip 8 out of 10.
God, We've got some tech whiz kids around here.
And
okay.
Not just because I'm an early adopter, but because also I use 2-step verification on all my
passwords.
Oh, wow.
Okay, that's good.
And not the name of my cat. Which already puts me above quite a few people in Germany, right?
Absolutely. You're way above average in that case. Okay, I would give myself a 2, and that's quite generous, but I won't go into all that. Okay, what score would you give German society and German politicians after this data leak we've had? Just a quick reminder, around 1,000 politicians, journalists, celebrities found that personal, private information was suddenly all over the internet and online. They had contact info, bank details, family photos, private correspondence all published online. So what score do you give German society or German politicians?
I think they're 5.
Right.
And that's kind.
And that is being kind.
That's kind.
Why are they worse than all the people in this room?
I think the fact that everyone pointed towards institutions and politicians shows that people don't believe that it's up to them. And probably 2% would know about the two-factor authorization that Jill has just mentioned. So people are not really aware of the threats that are around there.
So there was a call for more laws. There was a call for a debate in Parliament rather than people to change their behaviour.
Right.
Also, our interior minister said 12345 is not an acceptable password. He said that in his press conference this week. We should know that.
But the interior minister also said that he's already around the internet since the 80s. which didn't really increase the trust in politicians in Germany.
I don't know where he was in the 80s, but it wasn't the internet, that's for sure. Okay, what was your favourite bit of the story then?
Oh, I mean, besides the Seehofer password moment, I think that after years of hacks by the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians and warnings about all of the dangers facing German society, it was a 20-year-old who lives in his bedroom at his parents' house who managed over the course of a year to accumulate all of these passwords of people like, you know, who should know better, a lot
and then
better.
I like the way no one noticed for about a month, so it shows how online this country is, doesn't it?
Exactly. And then there's sort of outrage that they should have noticed.
What about Merkel's fax number being leaked?
I haven't gotten a fax in years. Have you got a fax?
No.
Our fax machine's going strong in the office, I tell you. But I think outside observers hearing about Merkel's fax number being released must have been slightly puzzled by that. Anyway, before we talk all about technology and politics in Germany, I want to hear what you've all been up to this week. Fabian, you've been on your travels. You're in Ireland with the German foreign minister, Heiko Maas. Why were you there? Why was he there?
That's true. First of all, it has a tech aspect too, because we flew with a brand new plane. At the end, we learned that the plane was 18 years old, but it was sold as a brand new. Okay. The news they got, we had the first flight with that plane.
And it took off, unlike Angela Merkel's plane in the past.
Yeah, maybe the trip was just to test this plane. We were told again and again that it was the pilot of Angela Merkel, so we shouldn't have to worry, even if the plane doesn't really work. That was just a minor aspect. No, we went there. Heiko Maas gave a speech at the ambassador meeting in Ireland, and he met with the Irish ambassador, and the whole trip, of course, was at the sensible moment. In 1 week's time, we have the vote in the parliament in Great Britain on the Brexit agreement. And Heiko Maas used this opportunity to show his full solidarity and Germany's full solidarity with Ireland, and also to show and tell the Irish people that nothing that would lead to a hard border within Ireland would be acceptable to Germany, and that this wouldn't be debatable, and the Germans with their past know that a border is always something that threatens peace. And that was the important message that Heiko Maas wanted to give in Ireland.
So there have been lots of German-Irish meetings recently. The Irish Taoiseach Varadkar was in Bavaria with the Bavarian Conservatives. Merkel's been on the phone with him. So are Germany and Ireland, Dublin and Berlin, going to save Brexit?
Well, I mean, Germany's limited in what it can do, of course, yeah, apart from kind of turning up like, you know, your cool mate at school and showing that the gang, Europe, is behind Ireland. But there's very little he can do. So Heiko Maas also said in December that there was absolutely no more wiggle room for negotiating the backstop aspect of the withdrawal agreement.
Because that's the hope, isn't it, or the supposition, that
correct,
Berlin and Dublin might be cooking up a plan that can sort of get Theresa May's exit deal through Parliament, or that when it gets rejected, that it could be tweaked. Any truth in that, Jill?
I don't really think so. I mean, what Varadkar and Merkel would like to do, at least what he said, is that they would like to kind of, they have been brainstorming how they can help May or assist May in getting her agreement ratified. But
brainstorming doesn't sound hopeful.
No, it sounds like, there's very little they can actually practically do.
So political posturing, if anything.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you are British, but you grew up in Northern Ireland. So
correct,
you're kind of Irish and British.
Mm-hmm.
And German as well.
And now German, yes.
Now found out.
Thank you, Brexit.
So you're from the region of Europe that's going to be most affected by Brexit. What are people thinking there?
Well, I was home visiting my parents at Christmas, and I would say the mood is still utter confusion. I mean, that just the sheer pace of comments and headlines and what's going to happen as we kind of barrel towards next week, the 15th of January.
And of course, on 29th of March, if nothing else happens, Britain will leave the EU, Northern Ireland with it, but
mm-hmm,
the Republic of Ireland will stay in the EU, which causes all sorts of complications about trade between Ireland and Northern
Ireland. I think
normal
people feel they're just being carried along on this wave and can't actually do anything but sort of wait and hope that something sensible will be worked out for the border.
Well, they might be waiting a long time.
Exactly.
Okay,
tell
me something non-Brexity, Andrea, that you've been doing this week.
I have been quite consumed by this data breach,
yeah,
which, you know, I just kind of plunked into my lap. I dropped my kids off at the airport and came to work and was like, holy moly, here we go again.
Yeah, so that was a story
we
mentioned
Groundhog Day.
at the outset. Why was it such a big story internationally that all these politicians and celebrities had their personal details published online by this anonymous hacker, he was called initially?
First of all, every politician's nightmare that their cell phone should be disclosed, mm, and that people who don't know there are suddenly calling you in the middle of the night.
Because they were very personal details, weren't they? Like bank statements and all sorts of stuff.
Bank statements, job applications. There were some photographs, but, you know, the German press has been very good about keeping them.
But no scandals. I still don't understand that. I'm sure in Britain and America, we'd have seen all sorts of stuff.
Well, the authorities
out there, surely,
have said that this young chap, this 20-year-old guy from Hamburg, apparently had quite a cache of stuff. And they're pretty sure that he would have continued. So we don't know what else was on his computers that we hadn't seen yet.
Okay, so it's not just that German politicians are particularly clean living.
I don't know. Well, you know, it's always tantalizing. I mean, there was the hack in 2015, which was attributed to the Russian hacker group. And nothing ever really sort of emerged from that either, so maybe they are really good. I doubt it, though.
I mean,
we know lots about our previous chancellors and how many combined marriages they've had, and you know, all of those things. So it's
So you're still digging. Okay, I wait for that story, Andrea. Okay, well, I said earlier that I would check whether your assessments of your own IT skills are correct. So I'm going to test your tech knowledge now. We're going to have a quick quiz connected to this week's data breach scandal, and I'm going to see how your scores compare with how you feel you are yourselves in tech. Most of the questions are true or false, so pretty easy. First question. True or false? The data breach was the result of hacking. The culprit could, in other words, be called a hacker.
False.
Thank you, Jill. 1 point to you.
It's actually called a doxing attack.
Ah, very good. That was one of my questions. Okay, I can scrap that one. Tell me why he wasn't a hacker then.
As far as I know, the definition of doxing is kind of squirreling around in people's social media accounts, getting in there, finding a lot of existing information that already lives on the internet.
He basically trawled the internet, didn't he?
He did, and put it all together, as opposed to sort of some sophisticated thing where he broke into the computers or iPhones, etc.
Okay. Next question. True or false? All the data was illegally obtained.
False.
That's Fabian. Very good. Why is it false?
Because lots of the data was just available. You know, you can find in data banks, email numbers on websites of politicians, phone numbers. So many of those details were already available, were on the market, were somewhere around. So one hadn't be a criminal to get these information.
Okay. So what was illegal about it? Because he is being charged, isn't he?
Well, it's illegal to obtain and distribute private data. In Germany particularly, but in general, in Western societies.
So it's the distribution of it that might be illegal. Mm.
Yes, it's both things. It's both obtaining the data, the private data. So he's facing charges, up to 3 years in prison on that charge, but then also in distributing it.
And of course, it's absolutely illegal to hack a password or to buy a password in the darknet, which is the latest twist that we heard yesterday. Use this password, enter the mailbox of someone else and read the emails and publish them. That's, of course, illegal, and that's what happened. And there was a lot of private data, for example, the private conversations, a family chat of one of the most famous German politicians, Green, Robert Habeck. His private chats with his wife, with his son were published. And this is, of course, terrible to imagine that would happen to any one of us.
So that's illegal, but then if someone's contact details just happen to be online on some website somewhere, that wouldn't be illegal to get that information.
Yes.
Okay, next question. True or false? This was not a cyber attack. Stop looking at my notes, Jill.
True. It was not a cyber attack.
True, it was not a cyber attack. I had to get my true and false right.
Too many negatives.
I know, it wasn't a very well phrased sentence.
You invited grammar experts, not tech experts.
I had to be careful with Andrea. No, so why was it not a cyber attack?
Well,
despite what some of the headlines have had us believe.
Exactly. Well, and I think it's, in some ways you could say broadly it was a cyber attack because it involved an attack on computer networks. So, depends. But he wasn't using malware, malicious software to break into some government archive or some party database. He was acquiring the information in other ways. As Fabian just said, we found out yesterday that, their investigators have found that he now actually purchased some of this stuff on the so-called darknet, which is the illegal internet.
Next question. True or false? This one's for Germany. Fax machines can be hacked.
True.
Very good, Jill. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's this thing in Germany where people do say, well, of course, fax machines are very secure, can't be hacked. But why can they be hacked?
I just know that they can.
Okay, yeah.
I still want to keep my 8 out of 10 score.
Well, you're doing well with that so far. True or false? There is no way for individuals to protect themselves from their personal data being stolen.
Hang on, that's two negatives. False.
There's a grammar test, isn't it? Exactly. False. So there are ways for individuals to protect themselves from the data being stolen. What are they, Jill?
Well, the two-step authentication process, which you type in a password and then it sends a code to your phone and then you type that in. And you can use that with most websites these days and most apps, especially banking. Things like banking is very important.
Very good.
I would actually say that it's false since, basically everything is available. And if you have a good friend in the NSA or somewhere, I think nothing can be protected. And even the two-factor authorization, for example, with Gmail, was misused again and again. There are reports that particularly this system was actually used to get into accounts of people. So I think it's pretty hard. There are many ways to protect your privacy better than it is done by most of the people, but I wouldn't say that there is 100% security.
Okay, so you actually mean it's true. So I've got my double negatives all mixed up. So there is no way for individuals to protect themselves from their personal data being stolen is true.
Yes.
Essentially. But you would say false.
So essentially, okay, we shouldn't worry. If we can be hacked, no matter what.
Yes. We can be hacked. Yeah, we shouldn't worry.
Okay, so I don't need to bother with that two-step identification.
No. Basically, everyone we know probably could do more to protect themselves, mm-hmm, but even those who do everything can still be hacked,
mm-hmm, okay,
I would say.
I think the missing word in your question is completely. You know, it's that 100% thing. So you cannot completely protect yourself, but you can do a lot.
You guys are good. You're really, you know, living up to your self-assessment of your IT awareness, I would say.
Yeah, and even you couldn't protect yourself offline to be cheated or...
Well, that was actually my next question. I'll give you a point for that, Fabian. So my next question was going to be true or false, being offline is one way to avoid data breaches.
Absolutely not. If you want to hear a personal story, €10,000 were stolen from my bank account 10 years ago, and I was sure, oh, that was online hacking since I'm doing online banking. And what the police and the bank found out at the end of the day was that there was a faked piece of paper brought to the bank with my signature used. Yeah, someone faked my signature and said, well, please post €10,000 on this bank account.
That's true. I have always wondered about this idea offline of signatures being a way to do anything, really.
So when everyone says, I don't do online banking because it can be hacked, well, offline banking can be too.
I just sign for everything, which is so safe. Next question. True or false? The culprit behind this data breach was highly skilled.
False.
I would disagree.
Andrea,
he was self-educated. He does not have a degree in information technology. He's still in high school. But he did manage to acquire quite a bit of information through using technological tools. And it was, you know, self-educated. But, you know,
that's what was interesting this week. German authorities seemed absolutely shocked that this young man didn't have IT training or any kind of qualification. Like, you know, the sort of obviously the cliche of the teenage hacker in a bedroom hasn't kind of arrived here yet.
Right.
But
and he was 20, so he wasn't even that young. But he's being described as like a child, isn't he?
Well, and he was not held because they didn't think that he would run away and they didn't think he would do any more damage.
And his parents wanted a word with him, right?
And I had quite a row with the head of the federal police. And I was like, what makes you think that this guy who's managed to acquire all this information isn't just going to go to the nearest internet cafe and just keep going? And he was like, well, we have experts.
Okay, next question. Can new laws prevent something like this happening again?
No.
Very
yeah,
good.
Since
point for Fabian.
When people use 8 1 2 3 4 as password or password, it will be easy to just log in again and again.
Fabian, what you keep doing is you keep preempting my next question. So I'm going to give you another point because you're obviously really on the ball here, which was going to be what's the most common password in Germany?
Well, it was 1 2 3 4 5.
It's actually 1 2 3 4 5 6.
Well,
I'm going to take you away. Take away a point for Andrew.
But Seehofer did say I love you was common too.
I love you is
in
also
English.
Common. Yes, which I didn't
Not
understand.
Ich liebe dich.
What else was common?
Password. Password is also apparently quite sophisticated password for some people.
And then I quite liked the fourth most common. It's a bit unbroadcastable.
Mm. Oh, well, then we would hear it from you.
Yeah, I know. I was hoping someone else would say it. The F word in German.
Oh,
interestingly.
There's a good password.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw that on the Welt website last night and I thought, my.
These racy Germans. Okay, I've kind of lost track of your scores, so I will just say that you all did exactly as you were expected to do. So I think you merit your high ranking of your own tech ability. What was the other big story this week that was about politics and tech?
Oh, Robert Habeck.
Yes, one of the leaders of the Green Party.
Who quit Facebook and Twitter on the same day, mostly because he twice now said things on Twitter that were just not politically very nice.
That's right.
And then because he'd also been hacked in his chats and, mm-hmm, you know, with his kids and family members, he just said, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah.
Twitter has a bad effect on
him. But he blamed Twitter. He said it brought out something in him.
It triggers me to be aggressive.
Yeah, so what did he say on Twitter that was so offensive? There were a couple of things, weren't they? Politically not very astute.
Well, he said, He tweeted that the Greens were campaigning to make the state of Thuringen, to bring democracy to the state of Thuringen.
In eastern Germany.
In eastern Germany. Where,
tactful.
Yeah, of course, trolls. And in fact, everyone pointed out that, you know, in fact, all states of Germany are democratic.
Yeah. So. And then there was something also after the Bavarian elections.
Yeah, he already said that the Greens again, would bring back democracy to Bavaria. And everyone, of course, asked, what was it before? It was a dictatorship.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, kind of.
Stop
yeah.
saying that, Robert.
What do you think of that decision then to leave Twitter and Facebook for a party leader?
Oh, he'll be back. I think it's absolutely impossible or even inadvisable for politicians these days to not have a social
right.
media presence.
It's even like in Germany. Where
yeah, it's like saying 50 years ago, I'm not going to use the phone.
But it doesn't matter, Jill, because he was the most common guest on the many German political
right.
talk
he's
shows.
He's everywhere anyway.
Anyway.
Is what you're saying, yeah.
So he has other fora where he can appear and give his message.
We should bet some money on this. When will he take to Twitter
let's
again?
Do that. All right, let's
giving,
do a bet.
I'm
Go
giving
on.
It 3 months. I'll see you in
3 months.
Ah, okay,
3 months. 10 euros? Is it worth 10 euros?
It's worth
right,
10,
okay,
yeah.
Throw 10 into the pot. Who else?
I would also...
Within 3 months, he's going to be back on Twitter and Facebook or... Twitter or Facebook.
Just Twitter.
I would also say that it wouldn't harm him because within his voters and the people that the Greens are aiming to, I think there's also an unease, you know, with the speed of social media, with the sort of hectic and...
So you
and
think it's gone down well with his supporters?
I would imagine yes.
I mean, he was criticised, though, for distancing himself from voters, for not being accessible to voters on social media.
Well, the other co-leader of the Greens said, I'm staying on, and other politicians, including Lars Klingbeil from the SPD, said they thought it was an inadvisable move, that particularly in these times, it's important to have ways of communicating with voters.
And but not I leave think, social media to the nutcases, essentially. That's
well,
what a lot
but
of people
I think
saying,
that there's a sentiment in Germany that is very skeptical of social media anyway, and Habeck in some ways is sort of, you know, he's just touched that nerve. What he's done and said very publicly is what a lot of people feel very, you know, feel and maybe have been thinking about. I mean, I know that I, after all the Cambridge Analytica stuff, I really thought, wow, I got to get off of Facebook. I mean, this is crazy.
But what did Dorothee Baer say about who's on Twitter, famously? Yeah. Digital minister.
Mm-hmm.
What'd she say? Who's on Twitter? It's only journalists, politicians and psychopaths.
Did she say psychopaths? Psychopaths, right?
Psychopaths, yeah.
I mean, it has certainly a true side of it. I mean, I do believe that people and journalists, politicians overestimate social media, particularly Twitter, because it is basically a tool that isn't used by the society. And what Habeck was told, that you're distancing yourself from the people and from society and you're neglect the dialogue. I mean, there's so much more ways to have a dialogue with people and to engage in discourse than on Twitter. That I think he wouldn't have to fear that. And
I think to forgo all social media might be a bad move.
More importantly, back to Jill's bet. So Jill's put 10 euros in the pot for
he'll
be back within 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Fabian, you think he's not going to be back at all on Twitter or Facebook?
I wouldn't rule it out, but maybe in 3 years when there's the next election, then the famous first tweet after 2 years of abstinence
will be waiting
a lot of attention.
With anticipation.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your bet then? He's very cautious with his money, Fabian. He's from Serbia.
Yeah, that's true. 2 euros that he won't return before 2 years from now on.
I put 10 euros on him not coming back to either of those two groups. I could see maybe Instagram or maybe Snapchat, little bunny ears.
Like Andrea, you've taken Jill
on.
People
still using Snapchat?
The challenge is on. We will
it's
see.
On.
Okay, within 3 months, let's see what happens. Right. There's also, finally, another story connected to our theme a little bit that I'd like to chat about. What's the other big story this week that got people worried about the level of political debate in Germany?
That was certainly the case of the AfD politician Frank Magnitz. He is a member of the Bundestag, German parliament, and head of the far-right AfD in the state of Bremen. And he, to put it correct, got injured at his head. And very fast, AfD told the story that he was hit by a wooden stick by some left-wing guy or something. So it was a political attack with a piece of wood, and they wanted to kill him.
And that he was kicked on the ground.
And they kicked him when he was
down. And kicked him when he was down, yes.
This is quite a high-ranking leader of a regional
part of the anti-migrant AFD, the right-wing populist AFD party. So for any politician to be attacked or to be hurt in this way, where it could be politically motivated, is quite shocking, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, people getting hurt is always shocking, and it's a violent act, no matter what's behind it.
And it was a severe attack. He ended up in hospital.
It was a severe attack. Maybe he just fell in a very bad way. That still has to be...
Why is the doubt around this? Please say they have a video of him being attacked from behind. What's not clear is whether his severe head injuries were caused by the attack or whether they were caused by the fall subsequently.
I think that is clear. I think the prosecutor said very clearly that the videos, which they have and that do show the attack, show that he was jumped from behind by one of the three people that were to be seen, and that there's no evidence that they know of thus far of any wooden bars or anything else being used, and no sign that he was kicked while he was on the ground, and that the assailants or the people involved ran away as soon as it happened. So the entire story is very trumped up.
Nice use of the word there. Jill, getting back to our theme then, what does Twitter have to do with this?
Well, in kind of stirring up emotions, because there was a picture posted by another AFD member of Magnitz lying on the ground, clearly very, very, you know, injured. And it was called on Twitter an assassination attempt. I mean, this is...
AFD leaders were saying it was an attempt on his life, a politically motivated murder attempt, they said.
Exactly.
There was also this very gory photo of him in hospital, wasn't it? Of his head wound, this big bloody gash. Yes, that went viral all over the world.
So long before the facts of the story can come out, already people are reading on Twitter that, you know, things like assassination attempt, you know, graphic pictures.
It stirs up an emotional response.
Okay. Yeah.
And one has to see that everyone was too fast in assessing that case. I mean, journalists, politicians, everyone used this fact that he was hit with a wooden bar, that he wanted to be should have been killed. And I mean, there was a big outrage, right? It was a cruel attack. But there was a lot of fake news about this. And this is probably the interesting part of the story, that the AFD, they have a newsroom that they're very proud of. And it is becoming more and more apparent that this newsroom is probably basically producing fake news, and that this had a lot to do with a fake news campaign, even though the man was badly injured, and which is not good. But all the background, it was at least way too fast, and probably even a process thing that looked completely different when you looked at it with police eyes 2 days later.
So, well, it's going to get worse before it gets better. I mean, you know, the thing is, we've got the European Parliament elections. We have a very public vow by Steve Bannon, the former strategist for President Trump in the United States, to steer that election to right-wing forces. We've seen a huge amount of manipulation of news in the run-up to various other elections, and the hacking and release of inappropriate data and faked data. So in the case of the story that emerged over the last week in Germany, there were cautionary notes put out saying, you know, even if you see and you gain access to this information, it may not be right. And we're in a sort of post-fact world where we don't know whether things are true, and we can't take anything at face value.
What we do know, though, is that the debate online and offline has become a lot more vitriolic, hasn't it, in Germany? Why is that?
Well, Habeck would say it's because of Twitter. You know, it's become, I mean, the society's polarized, right? It's much more polarized, and people have tools at their disposal to influence public discourse that they didn't have, but, you know, through things like social media.
To what extent is there a danger that this ferocious debate offline is tipping over into violence in the streets?
There is certainly a risk. I mean, in social media, you have very fast a big outcry. And when you consume social media, you get this outcry not once, but you get it 50 times in your bubble, and that's what everyone gets. So I would argue that this outcry is multiplied with every time you read the same story by someone else that you probably even know and who has a face and who is somewhat trustworthy for you. And when you read the same outcry again and again 50 times during a day, not just once next time in the newspaper as it was 20 years ago, you are probably, this outcry is so much bigger in yourself and this outrage, and then you are ready to everything.
Because the AFD's point as well is that far left activists have become more violent. And the AFD, whatever you think of them, they have been targeted. Their offices have been targeted in numerous attacks on property. We talk a lot about far-right violence. Is there a danger of far-left violence against the AFD, for example?
It is also, yes. And it has to do with language, I think, even more than with social media. Social media plays a role, but also with language. The language has become a lot more violent in German discourse since the AFD has appeared, I would argue. They say, we have to chase Angela Merkel and all these the words that were used. And they lead to a certain aggression, I think, on all sides. No one should be blamed for being attacked. I mean, at the end of the day, you can't argue or justify it with anything that was said before. But it's true that those languages that were used are part of a climate in Germany, and this climate certainly also increases the risk of violence.
The German president talks about a coarsening of society in an environment where people are agitated and also uncertain about their future, globalization. Just, you know, I think people in general feel very overwhelmed by what the modern world looks like. We have conflicts all over the world. So in that kind of an environment, when language is not controlled and not used carefully and judiciously, can trigger people who maybe are less stable to do things that they wouldn't do. I do think there's a relationship between language and violence in general, and language itself can be violent and harmful and hurtful. But the truth is that the Domestic Intelligence Agency has collected statistics saying that there is a greater willingness to engage in violence among left-wing extremists. And that was a trajectory that began and was sort of, you know, through the G20 meeting in Hamburg, where we saw quite a bit of left-wing violence against police officers.
And does that get reported less in Germany than far-right violence?
No.
Because that's what the AFD would say, wouldn't they?
We in the media report on violence when it is important, right?
German society is, German online society is no more crude or violent than the UK, where there's, it's easier with the anonymity of online to say what you think and with no accountability. And of course, in the States, where we have the president tweeting sometimes very insulting tweets about people. So that's coming from the top down.
But in Germany, is there a different mood because fewer people use social media?
I'm not sure.
We're catching up, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, those people that discuss social media are mostly the users. And that's the public, as we would see journalists, politicians, artists, whatever. Yeah. They use social media. They discuss social media. They discuss phenomena and social
and
media.
And in bubbles, like you say.
But we're
very much in the wrong bubbles.
We're talking here about domestic politics, but, you know, social media are also used to disseminate videos of beheadings and recruitment efforts by Islamic State. We've, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about radicalization and what role social media play in that, and particularly those populations that are vulnerable. So we're talking about teenagers often who are very vulnerable, perhaps isolated, perhaps socially isolated. And it is clear that this phenomenon of social media has gotten away from us as Western societies, and that we need to define new ground rules. It's a little bit like when cars were invented, we didn't have traffic lights. And, you know, we're still developing the traffic lights. And Germany's actually taken a really pioneering role in terms of curbing and trying to police social media.
By calling on social media companies to delete offensive posts or posts that are illegal.
Face heavy fines, yeah.
Face heavy fines.
Okay, well, my final question then to round up, and it's connected to our chat at the beginning of the show. After the data breach this week, what are you personally going to do to protect your data better online?
I'm not going to do much, Damien. No.
You've already got your double identification, whatever
tweeting.
It's called. Tweet away. So you're not leaving Twitter then, Jill?
Oh, no.
Well, I can say that my passwords have become more and more sophisticated. Like, have more and more trouble to remember them. And definitely over the years, I can see using small and big capitals and letters and signs and blah blah blah. It makes no sense anymore. My password. This is one thing, and I definitely step out more and more from WhatsApp and use other ways to communicate with friends and family.
Andrea, what are you doing to protect your data better online?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I do all this sort of normal things, but I'm starting to feel like maybe there's a different way. I don't know. Maybe I'll call Robert Habeck and we'll come up with a new a new tool.
What, telegrams?
You can fax
back.
Him.
Yeah. Fax him. Yeah. Well, you know, Reuters got it start with the carrier pigeons. So I'm thinking of investing in some carrier pigeons.
For me personally, now that I know that half of Germany uses hello as a password, I might change mine to something safer. But thanks to technology, what is safe for now is radio and especially podcasts. So do subscribe to this one or leave a rating or a comment. Thanks to Ben in the studio, and join us next Friday for more political chat from our very own radio stars here in Berlin.